Lauren Waldman has a true purpose. With the latest research in neuroscience, she helps us to understand how our brain works and how we can join forces with it to increase our learning abilities. My name is Mila Marie Bleeksma, and welcome to this Next Learning podcast. Lauren Waldman.
Hi.
Nice to meet you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Can you maybe introduce yourself?
I think most people best know me as the Learning Pirate, although my name is Lauren, as you said, and I'm the founder of Learning Pirate, the company, and a learning scientist and a science translator and scientific learning designer and just overall everything and anything you want to know about the brain and learning.
Why do you think it's so important?
I don't think I could have answered that question a decade ago. And it's not until you start learning these things until you realize how much we don't know about how we operate as human beings. So it's those fundamental underlying skills and things that we could understand more about ourselves that just help us have conversations, focus, learn better, do everything just by understanding how we work a little bit better.
And when did you start learning that?
Oh, it's been over a decade now. I mean, I was well into my career when my brain kind of found me, and it was sheer accident and coincidence. I was opening for another keynote speaker at a conference, and they were talking about neuroscience and learning. And I was like, oh my God, why don't we all know this? And then I just went really deep into the science. And at that point, I was the chief learning officer for a really large IT company. I realized that I don't feel like I know nearly enough about the operational system, the brain itself. And I've been designing learning and been an academic and done all the things for so many years. And I was like, no, I need to stop everything that I'm doing right now and learn about the brain and what it's up to.
And what did you find out? What were the most, what's the most important thing?
You know, a lot of what I do, my keynotes, my series is all titled Joining Forces with Your Brain. And I think that's what I discovered the most was there were so many ways that I was working against my own operational system, but there were so many more ways that I could work with it. And so whether that be to pay attention and focus, even in just like a conversation like this, or to recognize when I'm not paying attention and sort of guide myself back to focus when it comes to learning design, because that's what I was best known for. When I started to integrate the brain and brain operation, the ability to design learning became so much better because all of a sudden I wasn't designing thinking, well, what's the content of this and what activity am I going to do here and all of that. I was thinking, how is the brain going to take that in and how can I direct someone's attention to focus on what they need to learn? And ultimately, how can I help the person who's learning these things create a memory? How do I create a memory, which is like a bunch of neurons that need to fire at the same time together to retrieve that skill or behavior or something transferable in the tangible world?
How do we create memories?
Oh boy, here we go.
Is there a short version?
I wish there was a shortcut to creating, like, you know, long lasting, right? You know, we just spoke about this downstairs, which is, how long do you want the memory for? Do you need a memory for a short amount of time? Like, you know, you get a verification code to your email or your phone because, you know, your bank's locked you out. Or I don't need to remember that forever. But if it's something like I'm in a manufacturing plant and I need to remember very specific operations so that I don't get hurt and I don't hurt other people, well, that's going to take a little bit more time because all of a sudden I'm asking my brain to create neural pathways that represent, okay, touch this button at this time and pull this lever at this time and watch out for, you know, the trucks that are going to be going here. That's a lot to take in, just those three little things. And on top of it, if you're a new hire, you're dealing with an environmental change, which means that, you know, it's almost like the first day of high school. You're kind of scared. You don't know where you're going. Like, where's the bathroom? Where's the lunchroom? How do I get out of here? So there's so many factors that come into play. But when it comes to memory, how long do you want to have the memory for? where, when, and how do you want it to be transferred? And then we can start talking about how do we design the learning itself to help solidify a neural network in someone else's brain, because you need to practice, you need to rehearse. You can't just do it all in one day or all in one session, because memory is consolidated while we sleep.
Why don't we learn how to learn, how our brain works?
You know, I want to give us all a little bit of a hall pass, if you will. We have such strong beliefs and behaviors, and, you know, majority of people all around the world have been taught very specific ways, which is through educational systems that haven't really changed in over 300 years. So the methods and the strategies have been very much the same. You know, if you think back to when you went to school, you can think probably, oh, period one, I had math, and then like period two, I had like English and then some geography. And we were just taught to memorize things, like rote memorization to pass a test or to complete that project. But I think it's no one's fault that we haven't stopped to examine that question. But now that we have that question, now that we've got science to back it up, we really need to change the way things are, you know, being done. And I think it's also like myself, I was an educator, I'm a learning professional. I had to wave my white flag. I'm like, yeah, it's not that we're doing it wrong, but we now know how to do it better. And as learning professionals, it's almost embarrassing if you're turning down the opportunities to make it better for yourself and for your students and for anyone who you're trying to help change a brain. Because at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to help people do.
Yeah. And how do people work against their brain? How do we do it?
So many ways. You know, when we try to push through something, when we are tired, when we are overstressed, and we think that that's the best time to try to keep going or to sit down and do a bout of learning, it's the absolute worst time to try to do that. We want a little bit of stress when we're learning. That's good. But when we pass a certain threshold, we're now working against the system. You flood the system with too much adrenaline, and it's going to take the executive function offline. And we need to be able to focus in order to learn, because it takes a lot of energy, especially when you're learning something new. You need to focus. And the brain is expensive, and the currency is energy. So how are we using that energy to best focus? So I think that's one part of the puzzle here.
Yeah. Do we need more pirates like you?
Yes. That's also part of the problem. You know, I was talking to a very heated conversation the other night after I arrived here. And the problem is that there are millions of brilliant scientists all around the world. There are not as many translators. And that is a problem. So for me, a lot of the work that I do is in disseminating the research, is in speaking with my board of advisors, who are all neuroscientists, behavioral scientists, cognitive neuroscientists. They're all in those domains, to make sure that my translations are accurate and they're valid, and that what I'm offering to everybody else in the public is actually legitimate science. But it's that piece of the puzzle. There's just not as many of us. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who have a great interest in the science, but they don't have the credentials and they don't have the know-how. So even though they mean well, they're actually doing more harm than good by spreading more myth. And that leads to bad practice.
Why do you think it's so hard
to translate?
Yeah.
It's very time consuming. So that's number one. But it also requires someone to have, you need the underlying knowledge itself. So the very first certification that I did was on the foundations of neuroscience. And it was hard. It was so hard. You know, I just got off stage and I shared with everybody how a picture of me looking so horrendously ugly because I was in the thick of study. And it was very hard. And most people don't, as an adult, we don't have time. We don't have time to take that dedicated, you know, amount. And it takes a long time to not only learn, what do these words mean? Because if I'm being honest, like when I first started studying, it was like being back in kindergarten. I couldn't pronounce things. I was like, what is this word? Like there, one in particular, it's the word acetylcholine. And if you look at it, you look at it, how it's spelled, you're just like acetyl, and it's like going back to kindergarten and learning how to read again. So it takes a lot of time. And then we're also dealing with the most complex thing on the planet. It's so complicated up there underneath the hood of our skulls. And so even, you know, I sit in awe of the scientists who I get to engage with because they know so much more than I do. But I think that's why it's not out there as much, is because translation is almost a job in itself.
So I know a lot of people that work a lot, work long hours, are very tired. And when I hear you talking, I think that's the worst thing you can do, actually. Stay working, keep working while you're really tired. It's your brain is getting on fire.
Yeah, but no one ever taught us how to defocus. You know, our teachers in school never said, take a break. You know, just close your eyes for a few moments here and just take a rest. They never, you know, past kindergarten, like we were able to take naps in kindergarten. But past kindergarten, we're not given that luxury. So because the strategy is completely different, right? And we don't have that time to be intentional. And if we do have time, especially if it's at work, there's very few organizations I know who allow their employees to have designated learning time, which is what is very much needed in their day to day, as opposed to having these learning interventions, which last a half day or a full day or a week long. These onboarding programs that can be up to like 6-7 weeks long are just hideous, as if you ask me. They're torture for people because you can't remember the plethora of names of the people that you're being paraded around to meet on your first day. And then all of a sudden there's process and procedure and you're trying to get integrated into your work and you got to get your laptop and how do I get around this office? And there's your face is, you can't see it, guys, but like the face just said it all. It's like, oh my God, it's so much. It's so much. So how do we create space and time and intention for people to have that focus that they need in order to really learn?
Do you think businesses already are working on it, or do you think it's something that's completely new for them?
No, I think that we're getting there. I think that we're definitely getting there. I think the terminology of learning development is, you know, learning in the flow of work. And when I even say that, I kind of cringe a little bit, because if we know that the gateway to learning is focus, if you're learning in the flow of work, is it intentional? And has it been strategically designed into that day? Or is it, no, you're doing your day-to-day, you're doing your job, and therefore you are learning what you are doing. That's a small portion of it. But when there's no intention and when there's no time set aside for that intention, well, then we're just working. And then, you know, we can't just say learning, right? We focus so much on the process and the act of learning, but really the outcome is memory. Mm-hmm. That's what we need to focus on. So at work, even in schools, I think as educators, whether you are a learning development professional or a teacher, as educators, we need to understand that we are, our jobs are to help another human brain create a memory. We can't create it for them.
What would you say to learning and business developers? Like, what would you say to help them?
You know, I love to give this example, is that we need to level set expectations. And the only way that you're really going to understand is to start exploring the brain that little bit more. You know, understand the operational system. You know, when most of us learn to drive, we didn't just, you know, get into the car and put our foot on the gas and be like, this is how you drive a car. You know, let's start moving around the steering wheel. You had to learn, oh, there's a certain amount of pressure that I need to put on the gas and I have to actually put the car into reverse and then into drive. It was a process. And that's the same for all the type of learning, is level set the expectations. And if you understand a little bit more about how we fundamentally operate as the human beings that we are first, then you can transfer that not only into what you want to learn and remember, but just into your everyday life, your behaviors, the way that you engage with people, the way that you communicate, the way that you pay attention just to the world around you. So if we take it away from the context of learning and we just encourage people to explore themselves as fundamental human beings, I think we're already taking a step in the right direction.
Thanks.